You are listening to a sermon by Paul Thiessen, recorded on Sunday, October 20th, 2019, at the Point Grey Interminonite Fellowship while meeting in the St. James Community Square in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
Well, I was wondering this morning with a wall of mirrors whether it's going to make us more reflective. Okay, I just said, wonder whether the hall of mirror would make us more reflective. It does. So yes, I know that my voice has a tendency to descend, and I'm going to try very hard not to do that, so that we can all hear me. I just want to say before I begin that this is a subject that is complicated, and I do not pretend to have the received wisdom on this. I really feel that I'm very much a seeker, and so I'm going to give some thoughts about it, but I do not feel that I've got in any way the final word. So if I was asked for a show of hands this morning as to who had experienced only unmitigated joy and happiness this week, I doubt that anyone would raise their hand if they were going to be honest. The reality is that no matter where you live, conflict, struggle, pain, and suffering are woven into the fabric of our everyday existence. The Bible explains this as the result of the fall. After Eve's disobedience, God turned to her and proclaimed in Genesis 3, "I will greatly increase your pains in childbirth." And to Adam he said, "Cursed is the ground because of you. Through painful toil, you will eat of it all the days of your life." End quote. A link between pain and punishment was therefore instilled in the collective psyche of the people. Confronted by a man blind from birth, the disciples asked Jesus in John 9, "Who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Or when 18 died when the Tower of Siloam fell on them, and the disciples asked, "Do you think they were guiltier than all the others living in Jerusalem?" Jesus did not agree with their connection of suffering to sin, but rather took the opportunity to break their link, instead saying, "This happened so that the work of God might be displayed in his life." Rather than linking pain and suffering to punishment, Jesus rather turned their attention to the redemptive purposes that are to be served through pain and suffering. The writer of Hebrews took this idea even further, treating suffering as a gift, which reveals God's love. As stated in Hebrews chapter 12, quote, "The Lord disciplines those he loves and punishes everyone he accepts as a son. Therefore, endure hardship as discipline." Of course, seeing pain and suffering as a gift is something that has sometimes been taken too far. In the 16th century Church of England book on the office of the visitation of the sick, there is a quotation which says, quote, "Wherefore, whatsoever your sickness is, know you certainly that it is God's visitation." One's attitude towards illness, in other words, was to be seen as twofold, either as punishment sent from God meant to bring one to repentance, or as one's personal cross given to produce greater patience and character. Jesus, however, never approached those suffering with the advice that they look for the good in their pain. He rather healed them. Neither did he say that their suffering came from God. Jesus was instead said to go around, quotes, "healing all who were under the power of the devil," Acts 10:8. It was Satan, in other words, who Jesus claimed was behind the pain of the world. We, however, no longer live in a world where Jesus visibly heals all who are sick, and so we've been left to question the reason for pain and suffering. There is something fundamental to the human condition that wants to find meaning and purpose in pain. Viktor Frankl, the author of Man's Search for Meaning, highly advisable read, who was himself a Holocaust survivor, wrote, quotes, "Man's concern is not to gain pleasure or to avoid pain, but rather to see a meaning in his life. That is why man is even ready to suffer, on the condition, to be sure, that his suffering has a meaning." I'm a physician, not a theologian, and so I tend to view the approach the question of pain and suffering from a medical perspective. I have to admit, my wife says it very much is the case. I just finished reading the book The Gift of Pain by Paul Brand and Philip Yancey, and I was reading it for the second time. And I first read this book after returning from India in 2001 on a medical sort of visit, in which I gained new insight into the importance and necessary role that pain plays in our life. Paul Brand came to consider pain as a gift because of his work among leprosy patients in India. Little digression here. Paul Brand was a British orthopedic surgeon born in India to missionary parents in 1914. He'd originally trained as a carpenter and then decided to go to medical school in London and became a physician, and then decided that he would specialize in orthopedics because of his burden for those with leprosy. Interesting little aside here. People with leprosy do not like to be called lepers. People with leprosy. He developed innovative surgical techniques which involved tendon transfers to restore function to the claw hands of those crippled by leprosy. He was strongly supported in his efforts by his wife, who was a prominent ophthalmologist, who also worked extensively to aid those whose vision was threatened by leprosy. Historically, about 40% of people untreated for leprosy would go blind. I vividly recall my visit to a leprosy hospital, leprosarium, in 2001 when I was on that visit to Jamshedpur in India. I got there on that visit, just a little digression, because my brother, Jim, is a Mennonite minister in Kitchener-Waterloo, and he went to the World Congress of Mennonites in Calcutta in 1997, where he met Desmond Tully. And Desmond was a Mennonite minister working in Jamshedpur who had trained in a theological seminary in Calcutta. And he was also at this Congress, and Jim met him, and my brother Jim's a very outgoing guy, and they developed a friendship, and Jim eventually arranged for him to come to Canada for a visit in 2000, I guess. And Desmond is a person who has devoted his life to helping the tribal people. He married a woman who was tribal, and tribal is very low down on the social rank in India. They're typically people who are very dark-skinned, and there is a lot of color discrimination in India. And so Desmond established a school for tribal children who were not able to go to school otherwise, and a man absolutely dedicated to his work. So he arranged this visit for me, and I taught in a number of the hospitals there. And so I visited this leprosarium, which was a hospital devoted to the treatment of people with leprosy. Many of the patients I saw there were missing fingers or toes or even hands and feet, which is a truly, truly startling phenomenon that I'd never encountered before in any of my previous medical experiences on five continents. To hold the hands of a person afflicted with leprosy and feel their fingers' stumps was very disturbing and moving, vividly bringing to mind the familiar scenes from the Bible. It really got some insight into the fear that leprosy engendered. For leprosy is a profoundly debilitating disease that has drastic effects not only in deforming the physical body, but ruining the social well-being of its victims. From early on in the history of humankind, the diagnosis of leprosy was catastrophic, causing one to be ostracized by your family and your community, and forcing you to live separately outside towns or cities. And in fact, requiring you to wear torn clothes And to announce that you had leprosy, even using a bell, dreadful. The only recourse left for lepers, to people with leprosy for survival, was to typically beg, because they could not be gainfully employed. Nobody would have them. Because no one would care for them, the early church sometimes established communities or colonies where those with leprosy could live. And you may be familiar with the quite familiar story of the Belgian Catholic priest, Father Damien, who ministered selflessly to those with leprosy on the Hawaiian island of Molokai in the mid-1800s until he too acquired leprosy and died at the age of 49. Leprosy first presents with skin lesions, which are typically pale or flat, or reddened and flat, and they typically lack sensation to pain or touch. So you see yourself getting one of these lesions, and you can diagnose it yourself by taking a pin and pricking yourself and noticing it. You don't have pain sensation. Thickened nerves further signal loss of sensation and associated muscle weakness. It is this lack of sensitivity to pain which makes the disease so deadly, for this exposes the affected person to repeated injury to your fingers and toes and hands and feet, resulting in ulceration and secondary infection, with eventual loss of your digits and even of your hands and feet. Blindness occurs in about 40% of untreated cases because the cornea is damaged because you lose the pain sensation. Every one of us is constantly blinking. You're doing that so you put a layer of tears across your cornea to prevent it from drying. And if you try to stare for several minutes, you will be in pain. If you lose that sense of pain and stop blinking, you start to develop corneal ulcerations. And so there was a high incidence of blindness in people with untreated leprosy. Beginning in the 1940s, the first sulfa-based antibiotics were developed to treat leprosy, and it became known that the infection was no longer contagious after about 3 or 4 days of treatment. Okay? So it wasn't fair after that, after you were on treatment, to treat people as though they were infectious, because you weren't. So I had no anxiety about handling, shaking hands and holding hands of people with leprosy in India, because it had all been treated. 95% of people were observed immune from infection anyway. There's only about between 5 and 10% of the population that were that would acquire the infection on exposure. Those affected often retain very visible scars and deformities, including facial scarring, which results in them being treated as outcasts, and no one wanted to touch them. Surgery can correct some of this damage, and it was this life-altering tendon transfer surgery that Brandt pioneered, and which helps restore function to many whose limbs have been crippled. However, the surgery could be completely undone unless exquisite care was taken to protect them. So you've got your hand all stitched up after surgery, but you don't feel pain, right? And so if you start moving your fingers, you can just tear all the work apart. And so it became clear to Brandt in the early stages of his dedicated work that they had to be exquisitely careful to teach patients not to move their fingers in the early recovery period. You had to allow time to heal. In the words of Brandt, quotes, "In recuperation from surgery, the strange quality of insensitivity to pain at first seemed a blessing. He didn't feel pain. But soon, in a terrible irony, I found that painlessness to be the single most destructive aspect of this dread disease. I gradually grew to view painlessness as a curse." And one of the greatest curses that can befall a human being is the lack of ability to sense pain. He also said, "I asked our patients to assume the radical theory that all damage to hands and feet was related to their insensitivity to pain. Painlessness was the only real enemy. Leprosy merely silenced the pain, and further damage came about as a result of the painlessness. In other words, all subsequent damage was preventable." And this went strongly against received wisdom, which was that the leprosy infection itself caused damage. The leprosy infection caused damage to the nerves, but not to the tissue itself. Okay? Even greater than the physical problems experienced by victims of leprosy was the social rejection and ostracism associated with their status as being untouchables. Brand recalled an incident when he placed his hand on the shoulder of a patient only to have him break down into fits of sobbing. Brand worried that he'd said something offensive until a nurse pointed out that it was because no one had ever willingly touched him before. Think of that for a minute. What Brand came to realize is that good physical progress could only be made when those with leprosy were first accepted and loved by those around them in society. So here lies the first lesson. Pain is a wake-up call and warning system that alerts the host to the body being in danger. Pain is crucial to protect the host. I was medical director of the spinal cord clinic at Children's Hospital for 25 years. And so the kids in our clinic all had either spina bifida or spinal cord injuries or some form of spinal cord injury. And most of them had desensitized feet and toes and lower backs because of the effect of their neurologic injury. We had to warn patients to always wear footwear to avoid injury, especially when their feet were softened by water. So in summer when kids are in pools and things, you have to be they need to wear water socks because you don't notice in your feet when you're harming yourself. We also had to warn them that due to their sensitivity to pain as they got older, started taking over their own care, that they often had to use a handheld mirror to check and make sure they weren't getting pressure sores over their buttocks and lower spine because they don't feel it. In his book, Brand observes that pain is not the enemy, but the loyal scout announcing the enemy. I thought that was a pretty good choice of words. He said that pain is truly the gift that no one wants, but which protects and defends the body from injury and even death. In India, this means also defending themselves from rats that would bite and chew exposed fingers and toes in sleep, something we do not think about in our culture, but a huge issue in that culture and in other cultures around the world where leprosy occurs. Brandt said that his esteem for the role of pain in life runs so counter to the common attitude that he sometimes felt like a subversive, especially in modern Western cultures. He noted an irony that as society gains the ability to limit suffering, it loses the ability to cope with what suffering remains. He notes that less advanced societies do not fear physical pain as much as we do in our much more technically advanced culture. They're much more stoic and will often accept tooth extraction and childbirth without pain medications. And I certainly noticed that working in Africa. Stoicism that I just am not familiar with here. Pain and suffering is also a teacher, allowing the writer of Romans 5 to say, quotes, "We rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, and perseverance character, and character hope." Perhaps that is one reason why we have so few examples of healing in our day. It is the character produced through pain and suffering that God values so highly. Again, in the words of Viktor Frankl, "We must never forget that we may also find meaning in life even when confronted with a hopeless situation and when facing a fate that cannot be changed. For what then matters is to bear witness to the uniquely human potential at its best, which is to transform a personal tragedy into a triumph, to turn one's predicament into a human achievement. When we are no longer able to change a situation, just think of an incurable disease such as advanced cancer or Parkinson's, we are challenged to change ourselves. Pain is, therefore, a friend. Silencing pain without considering its message may be akin to disconnecting a fire alarm that's ringing to avoid receiving bad news that something's ablaze. Certainly, we may take ibuprofen to relieve a tension headache, but we should also give pause to reflect on why have I got a headache here? And the causes are myriad. I don't want to simplify that too much. The same may apply to abdominal pain, where the cause may be eating too much or eating too fast. When I travel and sit for long stretches on an airplane seat, my back twinges. And I get a strong reminder, because I've had recurring bouts of low back pain, that I better get up and move. My pain is telling me something important. Dulling a sports injury with an injection of local anesthesia is a practice which may allow a player to continue to play with severe muscle strain, exposing them to the risk of fracture without the protective effect of pain. I'd like to close with a warning against glorifying pain. Oswald Chambers, who was an evangelist, writer, minister in the early part of the 20th century, in his book, My Utmost for His Highest, said, "We all know people who have been made much meaner and more irritable and intolerable to live with by suffering. It is not right to say that all suffering perfects. It only perfects the person who accepts the call of God in Christ." End quote. It is Jesus, the suffering servant, that one catches a glimpse of how pain and suffering are made redemptive. It is therefore the Bible that should be given the final word. Here in 2 Corinthians 4, 8 to 10, we read, "We're pressed on every side, but not crushed, perplexed, but not in despair, persecuted but not abandoned, struck down but not destroyed. We always carry around in our body the death of Jesus, so that the life of Jesus may be revealed in our body. For we who are alive are always being given over to death for Jesus' sake, so that his life may be revealed in our mortal body." Therein is revealed the ultimate meaning to our pain. It is the crucible in which the currency of another kingdom is forged. That is why Paul, in spite of his shipwrecks, floggings, thorn in the flesh, imprisonments, and general persecution, could still say in 2 Corinthians 4:17, "For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. It has been left to us to discover the gift hidden in pain."